because that's the next book that I've been writing. Mm-hmm. And I'm not on any timetable for it. I'm not in a hurry for it. And mm-hmm. I'm doing it primarily for my daughters because they need to understand how to control themselves, how to make better decisions. And then once you've got that situated, how do you persuade somebody else? Because it's shockingly easy if you know certain things. Like this book has 55 tactics in it, right? I mean, there are more than 55. We took some out. And I still have all of those. Took some out. And some of those are good. Some of them are derivatives of the ones that are in there. But the ones that are in there and the ones that are in all these things right here, there's so many things that you can do to persuade somebody that it just makes life exciting. Yeah. And everything you get or have or do or be, you get with and through other people. That is a fundamental thing. That's why it's in the front of that book.
Yeah, I think the other saying that's coming to mind right now is like the quality of your life is determined by the quality of the questions you ask, both of yourself and of others.
Right.
You know, so that's, you know, like you said, if you can ask yourself those questions when something happens and rapid fire through them. I mean, Byron Katie's The Work, you know, is focused on kind of reorienting yourself. I think that's why so much marketing and persuasion people also like personal development. Because once you understand that principle, you see that like that's just how people work. And you can't persuade unless you start understanding human psychology and you know, what makes people tick and all that kind of stuff. So Jonathan, it looks like you're loaded for a question from the book. So let's transition to the book a little bit.
Yeah.
Sure. And hit some of the big points or the big takeaways there. Cause if you've not read this book, I will say this, if you've not read Covert Persuasion, one of the cool things is there's these $10,000 which with inflation, they're probably worth more than that now.
I'd say at least double. Yeah,
it's probably $20,000 now. All these $10,000 ideas in here that you can apply and literally be worth, you know, sending out an extra email or making an extra contact that is then worth, you know, X amount of dollars. And I know, Jonathan, you do that all the time with your contact. So, but
Pulling out like note cards out of my that I've made notes, Jim. This is my detailed. It's not as fancy as your book, but I did want to highlight there's one chapter in this book that I want to make our listeners aware of. But it's the chapter on covert strategies for changing beliefs. Mm-hmm. What I find in that is fascinating because initially when I read it, it almost felt like it went against. Like commitment and consistency from Cialdini, because you talk about the guy that's choosing the lady that's choosing between two guys. So immediately after she chooses guy A, the guy B, you know, then both of these guys have all these different qualities. Mm-hmm. And they all, you know, they all are great. So what comes to mind is like the show's The Bachelor. So nowadays, and but as soon as this person chooses option A, option B automatically in their mind becomes valuable, right? Because they've made that commitment, but in the sense that they're still interested in option B over here. What came to mind, you know, when I initially read that, I'm thinking, oh, Cialdini, you know, the principles of influence talks about commitment and consistency. Once you jump on board or once you make a decision, your actions are trying to make up or trying to be consistent with that decision, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I'm just curious. That's kind of a new thing. I found that really interesting. But you talk about ways to overcome people having that. It's almost like a buyer's remorse type deal where people need to overcome that. So yeah. I don't know if that rings a bell to you, but I'd love to hear a little more on that.
Yeah, there's a bunch of things you said in there, and I'm biting my tongue to just...
No, you just want to jump on that.
I just want to jump in and talk about it, but... Yeah, basically you're talking about option attachment, right? In the very beginning. So I can go back to, we all had experiences like this, right? It doesn't even have to be complicated. It's like when I was a little kid, I had a paper route. And the paper route, I would get some money, I would definitely want to go buy the latest toy or whatever. And so I would take my money. My dad would take me to Kmart at the time. I would pick something out, right? Mm-hmm. But the picking out of something with my money took forever.
Oh, yeah.
If it's dad's money, get this and go, man. I want this one. I want the most expensive. But if it's my money, I'm thinking, okay, I'm picking between this. I remember it was a Tonka truck ambulance, and it was something out. I forget what it was. Some like a bulldozer or something, two trucks. So I'm trying to decide. And then the pain comes in because I'm thinking of both. I'm thinking of playing with both. Where am I going to play with them both? What mm-hmm. do I like best? But then I'm also realizing once I spend the money's gone too. So I can't go back and get this one again. I remember I picked the ambulance. I'm thinking this would be the one that I'll play. As I'm checking out, I can still remember the feeling of, I think I want the bulldozer. And that's because option attachment. There's so many examples. Dating is absolutely one of those. Bachelor show, absolutely one of those. Because now you mentioned Robert Cialdini and the commitment and consistency. You said it right, because once the decision is made mm-hmm. is when commitment and consistency comes into play. So before the decision is made, the more time you take in making the decision makes the decision more difficult. So if you are choosing between two things that are fairly similar, you like them both, you think, pick one and move on. It's sort of like, you know, car dealership, all the options, the car, all that kind of stuff. You're thinking, okay, that's a long enough process. You kind of move along quickly enough that you don't regret the previous decisions. There's anticipated regret too, which is the future. But if you stick with deciding quicker, mm-hmm. and as a salesperson, you want to make sure that client decides quicker between you and the competitor. Yeah. You can talk about the competitor, talk about them quickly, and then talk about how you've got a superior solution for them so that there's no regret there. Because as soon as the decision's made, if there's no help and assistance from you to make that decision, from you, the persuader, then it's going to be like that dating situation. Oh, not does she just have some interest in the person she didn't pick. Mm-hmm. That person actually becomes more desirable now that they've not been picked. So mm-hmm. that's a problem.
Yeah.
And the only way to solve that is to rewind, go back to the decision process and help the decision happen quicker. When it happens quicker, then the decision's been made. Then commitment and consistency comes in, because then they want to be consistent with their previous commitments. They've made this commitment to this decision. Sure. Now they're going to find all the justifying things that support that. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, when they tell their friends, or you can equip them that when they tell their friends, they can say, did you know this was rated by the board as an A+ rating? Isn't that really cool? I chose smart. I'm smart. Right. So you need to rebuild up that time when they're going to, you have to inoculate them against all that anticipated regret. So commitment and consistency, it's not that it's different from that. I like how you were reading it thinking, I think it's different.
Yeah.
It's timing. Yep. It's that decision is separate from what happens next. Mm-hmm. And commitment and consistency, it's rock solid. I mean, that just definitely happens.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense. You know, you can look at that. You can get into politics with that. You know, people that make their decisions really quick on a certain particular candidate A, candidate B.
Yep.
You know, once they form their opinion quickly, it's pretty difficult. You know, then they start their foundational process of building all of the evidence as to why, you know, once they've formulate that. But I think, you know, the people that we're always talking about when it comes to election season are those people not on this side or this side. It's the people that are these undecideds, like this 5 or 6% that are like always at the last minute, like, hey, what are we going to do? You know, and these are the people that can go either way. Right.
The funny thing is, I don't think those people are undecided.
Well, yeah, it's becoming less and less.
Yeah. Well, the slice of those folks is very, very thin, right. Especially, you know, as the years go on here, but I think they, in their heart of hearts, I think they've chosen somebody and they're looking for justification to prove themselves that, even right. if they don't share that decision,
sure.
that's something that they're looking for. Like, they're leaning one way or another, believe me. And the people right. who are on one side or the other,
yep.
they don't just look for facts that justify. They ignore facts that compete.
Right.
for sure. And yep. they ignore all evidence to the contrary, as Kevin mm-hmm. would say in this book. So yep. It's so interesting how we're wired as people. And because we can predict that, it becomes easier to persuade people.
Yeah.
You can predict how they're going to think. None of this is a surprise.
Yeah.
Yeah. So keeping in this same kind of this idea of getting people to make decisions quicker, what are some of the covert strategies? What's one of the kind of the top ones to help facilitate that quicker decision-making? Because that's a problem for a lot of people.
Mm. Yeah.
And you know, there's so many options these days, like it's easy to get overwhelmed.
That's true. I mean, in anything.
And good options. They're not, it's not like it's a,
right.
I mean, there's a lot of good options. You go to the mm-hmm. grocery store, you go to the car lot. Like there's really not a lot of really poorly made cars anymore. Yeah. Like there's some that are better than others, but they all are better than they were 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So like, how do you help people through that decision-making process when I think it's harder than ever to make those decisions?
Well, and the funny thing is, not only do you have a lot of good options, you also have like an incredible amount of information at your fingertips. If you're mm-hmm. thinking of buying something, where do you go? You go to Google and you find out all you can. And you are as well equipped as the salesperson is, usually, if there is a salesperson involved. So there isn't that big advantage of like heavy information. I know a secret I'm going to tell you. It's going to make your decision very clear and you're going to choose this one over this one. Those days are gone because you can just quickly Google and get 500 reviews on what people who already made that decision thought. So you're way ahead. There's also something, there's a book called Paradox of Choice. I don't know if you guys have read that one. I think it's Barry Schwartz. Mm-hmm. My eyes aren't good enough to see across the room, but I'm looking at it.
I've heard about it. I haven't read it, but I've heard that title a number of times.
Check out his YouTube videos. I mean, the amount of psychology of choice that's in that book is incredible because he nails exactly how we all think about deciding things mm-hmm. and what annoys us and what makes the choice easier, hard. Okay. With that aside, back to what in this book would help, what would be my go-to? I'd probably do the behavioral imaging scripts is what it's called in the book. I call it a bunch of things, but really what it is taking that person who you're talking to and saying, okay, look, and admit all the things that are absolutely true, because long ago are gone the days of BS trying to trick somebody into deciding something.
Right.
And that's also in this book because I didn't even want to put any of that in here. It seems kind of hypey to me, but it's sort of like, well, isn't this manipulation? Well, yeah, but it's ethical manipulation, right? Because right. I have a good outcome in mind. It's better for you. It's better for me. It's better for everybody. Just like I mentioned it in here, but like a hammer. A hammer's great for driving a nail, but it can be misused. You can hit somebody in the head with it. It's just a tool. Mm-hmm. So all these tools, they can be misused. Yep. You could take this book could be a political weapon that, you know, or any influence book that is good mm-hmm. could be absolutely misused. But going back to how to make that decision happen faster, the way to make that happen faster is to, in just a couple of minutes, walk that person into the future. Walk them into the future. There's lots of things that happen when you do that. You're in control of that future perfect, I call it. So the future perfect with your product as the solution. Hey, look at this. When you make the decision, you're going to get immediate benefits of our toll-free service. You're going to get immediate this. You're going to have this go right for you. You're going to avoid all this downtime. You're going to have this happen. You're going to paint the perfect picture. And you're going to say, at the end of this, you're going to be so happy that you did this that you're going to even tell your friends and all of this stuff. Now rewind to the present. That's one future perfect. Mm-hmm. There's also a future terrible. So, you know, I'm going to help you make the decision. And this is where it's really weird. The future terrible is, let's say you choose the competitor. I'll never say anything bad about any of my competitors ever, because you know, there's no reason. They make a fine product.
Sure.
Let me tell you the difference. If you choose them, here's what's going to happen. You won't have this in the product. You'll have this instead. What does that do? In our experience, what that happens is this. You have more service calls. You have more this. This happens and this. I'm not going to say that's what's going to happen, but if it does, that's probably going to create some downtime in your company, and you're probably going to have this happen and this happen. And then you walk them back to the present. So good thing is, none of that has happened yet. You're at the time when you can make the best choice for you. So what do you say we go ahead with this one or whatever it is? That's a little bit a little bit old technology there, but yeah. It helps them see what would be bad if they chose wrong, what would be good if they choose right, and do that in just a couple of minutes. You're taking control of their internal conversations and helping them along. Yeah. Because if you leave it up to them, like if they say, hey, I want to think it over, you lost.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the death for a salesperson. That's just like the phrase of death right there. or that was a great presentation. That's, you know, you're dead there too. But
we'll let you know.
Yeah. You talk in the book about people, they really remember like big experiences and they remember their past, but they're not very clear about their future. So it seems to me what you're doing is because they're not clear about their future, you're creating it for them.
Right.
So that's where you have the most ability to morph and create the future for them, because they don't actually have a clear vision of it.
Yeah. Very few people are good at visualizing. Just think of buying a house. You go into the house, it's got ugly wallpaper, it's got whatever. That'll turn a lot of people off. Whereas some people walk in and say, oh no, we're going to strip this, move this wall. It's perfect.
Yeah.
It's not perfect, but they can see the future perfect.
Right.
It's the same kind of thing. And if you can walk them into a future perfect, you're in control of it. Because you're in control of it, everything goes smooth and right. It's easy. You're going to do a lot of the work for them. You can put all those phrases in there. And what you're really embedding in all of that is kind of a lot of things like pain and pleasure principle, right? So it's, you know, people do more to avoid pain than they will to gain pleasure. So you want to show the pain path, show it's short and specifically wrong, and then show the future perfect path. And if you do that with enough detail, depending on what your product is, and obviously pointing out the sincerely authentic differences that make you clearly a better choice, you have to do it ethically, because if you're not the better choice, then that sale is going to get returned, blown up, get a bad reputation. Yep. You know, obviously you have to have a good product. All those things have to be true, but just helping them see the future is one of the most missed things ever.
Yeah.
Well, what keeps coming to mind for me, and you, based on your library there, you've probably read it, but Nancy Duarte's books on presentations, and she takes apart like MLK's speech and JFK's speech, and that's what they're doing, right? They're showing this picture of what it is, and they come back to where you are, and they show this picture of what it could be and where you are, and it bounces back and forth. Mm-hmm. And then they use, you know, nostalgic phrases and things like this that create that new future that is so much better than the current reality that you don't have any choice but to want to pick that.
Right.
And the phrase "to want to pick that" is perfect. Yeah. It's aspirational. Mm-hmm. You want it. Now, politics is different and weird, because when you deconstruct political speeches, what you find is zero substance for the most part. Yeah. What they're doing is just platitudes and, you know, nice feeling words that everybody in the crowd assigns their own meaning to.
Yep.
Don't you want to make the future brighter for your kids? Well, yeah, I want that. You want that? Yeah, I want that. Let's elect this guy. There's no substance. Where's brighter mean?
Yeah.
Really? You know, Trey Gowdy just released a book. I just got it the other day, and I haven't had a chance to read it. I'll probably read it tonight. Mm-hmm. But he talks about the power of questions, which is why I got it, because the book is called...
He's a former attorney. Or no, he was a district attorney, right?
Right. He was a prosecuting attorney, and he was in Congress for years. His ability to question, I am fascinated by, because what he'll do is listen very hard to what you say and then make you define the words you just used in a way that absolutely proves his point. Mm-hmm. And you're going to do it for him. It's so smooth. It's so good. And back to, you know, getting them to want to do it in a sales situation with your product or service, that's more genuine to me, painting that nice future perfect picture, because you're talking about some specific actual real benefit they're going to get. Whereas in a political speech, you're talking about feel good, crowd thought contagions. These virtual things for politicians right now are a death blow.
Oh, yeah.
I don't care what party you're on, because
they're really bad.
the crowd is a participant. The mm-hmm. crowd thought contagion, because, and you know what I'm talking about. As soon as the candidate comes up, and he just doesn't come up first. You got some warm ups. You got some people getting the crowd pumped up. As soon yep. as that candidate comes out, it's like a concert, and everybody is just pro the candidate. And it doesn't matter. You can say, I love to be in Texas. Yeah, everybody's. What is that?
Yeah,
you're rooting for where you live. That's fantastic. But it's so different of an atmosphere.
It is. Because a lot of that's priming. They're priming you for it.
Oh, and for sure.
It's like going to, it's like you going to one of these big live events where the first mm-hmm. thing they do is when the main speaker comes out on stage, they got the crowd. I mean, they got the music jacked up and people are jumping and they're ready to go. By the time he comes out, it's like people are primed. But you're exactly right in this virtual stuff that you just can't get that. And it's just dead.
No. Well, I mean, then there's literally the physical energy of other human beings right. being close to each other. Mm-hmm. Those rooms are usually packed.
Yeah.
Right now, everything's social distance, but I think that's one reason belly to belly sales is still superior to any other form, because I mean, you got the body language and all that. You can see some of that on Zoom and things like that, but you lose that energy, like the literal energy field that, is now proven by science, before it was theory. I mean, Zig Ziglar, you talked about that at the top of the show, right? He's like, it's a transfer of enthusiasm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what sales is, right?
But this artificial thing right here,
you can't feel it.
No.
You can sort of feel it, but not as
well. You need some music. Okay.
Yeah, music would help. But you can transfer it from politics, right, to online learning for kids.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because politics is persuasion. Teaching is persuasion. Teaching
absolutely.
Is question. It's a question-based persuasion model. And all of that is just so affected by this right here that it's really just hurting everything. Yeah. And now more than ever, I think people do need to learn the tools of persuasion, because a lot of the ability to do it has been taken away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so you have to learn how to communicate more clearly, how to question things, how to get thought, how to get people to think with you and move along your path.
And even how to create the crowd effect. Like, I know when I do webinars or trainings online, I really stoke the chat, right? Because you can start to get that crowd mentality mm-hmm. if you ask the right questions in the chat and get people to participate in the chat. And it feels a little cheesy, but it just flat out works.
Absolutely.
You get people to talk about where they're from, that first question, where are you tuning in from, or whatever. And you mm-hmm. make a big deal out of where they're from. And then you start asking the yes questions or other questions, or hey, give me a feedback, are you liking this? And they're like, yeah, love it, yeah.
Yep.
And it builds on itself, and so you have to understand that matters, or else mm-hmm. you forget, you leave it out, and then you wonder why your sales are flat.
Right.
All of those things matter, and when some of the elements are taken away, it just makes it's like losing one of your senses, right? You lose one of those, the mm-hmm. story is, thankfully I haven't lost any of mine, so I don't know firsthand, but your others are heightened.
Yeah.
So if you lose this person-to-person contact temporarily, you've got to invest in yourself to learn how to make what you have left work better.
Right.
So what are the phrases? What are the words? Words matter. Are you saying the right thing? Are you getting them to think along with you? And if you're not, you just might as well, close out the Zoom window there and be done. You need to be able to reach through that almost and say, hey, let's walk through this together and get them going. So,
all right. So two things real quick. So I'm trying to think of a book that maybe you haven't read. So, which is going to be tough, but have you done the Brilliance? Have you done the Brilliance Breakthrough with Eugene Schwartz? So there's Breakthrough Advertising, but his other less known book is The Brilliance Breakthrough.
And much more expensive. No.
And back at the direct response days, I had to leave the Breakthrough one. That was one of the company's books, and it stayed when I left. So I didn't have it anymore. And I recently looked that up and can't find it.
Yeah. Brian Kirch, who's been on our show, and he's a friend of mine. He worked for Boardroom for a long time.
I just talked to Brian the other day on a Zoom call. As a matter of fact,
really,
yeah.
Wow. So he's got the rights to both those books, both the Breakthrough Advertising and the Brilliance Breakthrough. What you're talking about with the power of words. So the Brilliance Breakthrough actually comes with a workbook that, in true Schwartz fashion, like, breaks down the sentences and why certain words need to be in certain places and why the certain types of words need to be there, why they need to be visual words that create a picture in your mind. Like, it's just a fascinating, even if you know it, to actually go through and how he deconstructs it, only like he can do, in a workbook form, is just fascinating.
Mm-hmm. You know, you said something really important there, because I am not a believer that you can know it. This room is evidence of that. Your rooms are evidence of that. Because if you could, it's sort of like I took a bath, so I'm clean for the rest of my life. You know, no, or I lifted a weight, so I'm healthy now. You know, that's why my own book is tagged with all these, you know, all these little things in it, because I reference it. It's like the 12 most persuasive words in advertising from that Yale study. What are they? There's only 12, but I forget some of them. I like to have them out in front of me. And all the things that I've been trained on personally in the direct response copywriting, and I've written multi-million-dollar productions, front-end pieces that did wildly successful. I've written back-end pieces. I've written fulfillment pieces. I've written all these things. And those deconstructions you're talking about were painful. Mm-hmm. And we had access to those things at the time. You found one. I don't have that. I had it. And now that it's not with me, I don't have it, if you know what I mean.
Right. Yeah.
You gotta keep it poured into your head. And I remember legal reviews of the full page advertorials. We had four attorneys on staff. Those legal reviews solidly last 3 hours, no problem. Many would go beyond that. And they would literally question every word.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I'm like, in sentence proximity to each other, how soon is the claim? Where is the substantiation? We would end up with binders like this thick or where's my camera?
Yeah.
That thick on just what are the sources for every claim you're making. Because what I found out later, I was irritated at first when I first started to go through those. But what I found out later is they're just building their case. How defensible is this ad? Because we were in newspapers in every market. Yeah. We were everywhere. Regulators would call us. We'd get letters from attorneys general. We had the case built though, because we did all that pre-work. So,
yeah, I mean, I wrote for Agora for a while. So I went through that same process. And that was like, you spend 6 to 8 weeks writing the copy, you know, and then you spend another week with the legal team going back and forth. It was crazy. And even when you thought you were prepared, like you said, they questioned every word. It could be the same word, but in different parts of the thing, it meant different.
Yeah.
Like, it had different weight, right? Cool. If it's in the headline, it's totally different than if it's buried way down on the summary page or whatever, right?
So back to the words themselves, because I'm so hooked on that. Words and questions. There's so much depth there. Like Trey Gowdy's new book, one of the things he does is says words have different meanings.
Yes.
And that can absolutely trip you up.
Yeah, so. I do this experiment with my coaching clients. Usually in the first couple calls, just like pure life coaching stuff. And I'll say, okay, I'm going to say a word and I want you to tell me what comes to mind. And I'm not going to give you any hints. It's just going to be a random word that comes out, but I want you to describe the entire scene that comes up for you. And they're like, you got it. Yeah, I got it. All right. Let's okay. So make sure all the rules are clear. And then I use a word like fire.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's amazing. Like, it could be anything from my house burned down when I was a kid to a campfire with my dad and we went camping every weekend to, you know, a lighter at a concert just that one word has so many scenes with it. Mm-hmm. And if you're not aware of that when you're writing copy and you don't know your avatar, you could throw a word in there that you think is pretty harmless that could destroy everything. And it's just so fascinating that how much power each of those words have.
Yeah. Oh, somebody that lives in California right now, you mentioned fire. Yeah. It's probably not a good word to use.
Not a warm and fuzzy feeling. No,
they can see it on the horizon. It's not a campfire. It's a destructive.
That's right.
Burner. Yeah. So if you say this product is, you know, like fire, or, you know, mm-hmm. some like slang like that, mm-hmm. that's going to, even if they intellectually could understand what you're saying, like emotionally, it's going to pull up something you don't want pulled up.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And you have to be aware of that, or else it's just, you know, you either have to frame it and say campfire, mm-hmm. or be more, you know, put the adjectives around it that make it work. Right. But you can't just leave it out there. So, sure. And that's what Schwartz's book, The Brilliance Breakthrough, is kind of goes through over and over. All right. So I got to know, we're running, we've been doing this a lot lately, Jonathan. We've been getting such good guests that our shows have been going long. We're heading towards the Joe Rogan, Tim Ferriss model.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. 3 hours with no break. Yeah.
Yeah. Just keep going. So do you have any other questions? I got one question from the book, but
I was going to get, yeah, I was about to get into the film.
Okay. So before we go to the film real quick, like if you could only give one takeaway from the book for most people, what would it be? Like the one $10,000 trick or 20,000 with inflation.
You know, that's tough because there would probably be two, but.
Well, you can do one main one and we'll give a second as a bonus. How about that?
There's a section in the book about the victim virus.
Okay. And
that's kind of a favorite of mine because I think everybody, and I'm slicing on my language as I say it because I don't even like my own answer, but the victim virus.
Great phrase, by the way.
It's about blame. It's about blaming others for your circumstance. It's about blaming others for the way you feel. It's about blaming others for why things didn't work out. When in all reality, you need to turn all of that inside. Accept responsibility, because the only thing that matters is what you let in your own head. It's sort of like what Jim Rohn said, stand guard at the door of your mind. Mm-hmm. You can't let things in unless you agree to let things in. So there's so much in that victim virus section in that book that I like, that I think could expand into a huge lesson for everybody, that that's a favorite of mine. Okay. Second would be the steps to use story covertly. Stories bypass all your critical faculties. Mm-hmm. When I tell you a story, you're not dissecting it. You're listening to the story. Right. That's why movies are just suspension of disbelief. Go in, you know, Pinocchio is a puppet. This is ridiculous, but you're going to just go along with it.
Right.
If somebody, you know, whispers over to you that, hey, this is crazy. I'm watching the movie. So all of these things, there's definite steps and techniques to build a persuasive story. And stories by themselves, like I love Aaron Sorkin's writing. He wrote The West Wing. He wrote Sports Night. He wrote Molly's Game. He's an incredibly talented writer. He says I'll give you the lesson of writing in like a sentence. I'm like, oh, what is this? He's like, it's intention, obstacle, emotion. Your character has to have an intention. It has to be an obstacle that is almost absolutely going to stop that character. And it has to be mixed with emotion. Now there's lots of sub rules in that and how to do it.
Yeah.
My book, as old as it is, it's got some really good tips and techniques on constructing a persuasive story. How do you do it? And that I think would probably be a good takeaway. Learn how to tell a persuasive story. It will matter. And it will be so easy.
Yeah. And yeah, especially as we get, like you said, as we get virtual, you know, and that's, you know, we've hit a threshold where we're always going to be more virtual than we were pre-COVID. Like it's going to happen.
Yeah.
And being able to tell those stories to kind of get meetings going or to get presentations going or somewhere in there to keep the attention like that. I think that's going to be more, it's always been important, but because you don't have that, you know, it's so much easier for people to tune out on Zoom and be doing something else.
Oh yeah.
You know, right. There's stuff going on around you. There's, you know, like I've got three screens here. Like I could be looking at who knows what, like, mm-hmm. you know, where if you're in an audience in a boardroom, it's a little bit harder to do, right. to fake it.
And so, I think one of those things that helps replace some of the missing part, right?
Right. Because
a story will connect people to people.
Yes.
Yeah. When I tell you a story about when I was little and I was selecting between two toys, you were there in your own memory thinking when you were little. I mean, it just happens. I didn't even tell you to do that. I'm persuading. Well, if I had a goal, if I had an outcome based
for that story,
yeah. So the stories are critical. And I think now more than ever, I think you're exactly right. With the Zoom environment, which probably is never going to go completely away, it's going to be more important than ever. And stories, by the way, can be really short. It can be one sentence.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. One of my favorite sites is, and I use when I teach copy cubs and stuff, or is the 6-word stories site to show just how much you can pack in a sentence if you really want to.
Yeah.
You know, So Jonathan, let's switch gears a little bit, and you've got some other stuff going on, Jim, besides the book you wrote 15 years ago. You're still actively doing stuff.
Yeah.
So, so Jonathan, I'll let you lead that.
Yeah. So I want to talk about this Bleeding Blue, the film. I haven't had a chance to watch it, but tell us a little bit about some of the background for our listeners, if you would. Share a little bit about the background on that, and you know what. How, I guess, persuasion was used in that particular, was this like a documentary type?
It's definitely in the documentary category, and it's my involvement in it is a very tiny slice. Mm-hmm. The reason that it's in there is because Kenny Latimer, who is the producer of that movie, I've worked with Kenny for a number of years. He's got his own company. He does incredible projects, incredible video work. He knows how to put a story together. He came up with this concept with a bunch of other people, and I'm going to leave some names out, and I apologize for that because, again, my slice is right here. But anyway, the Bleeding Blue concept, it's very relevant right now. It's about police. I don't know if you saw the trailer for it or anything, but
I watched the trailer.
I'm going to spoil the movie's out, so I'm not going to spoil any endings for anybody, but I am going to spoil the ending for you. So what happened is... it's about what you think might be police brutality. You might think it's police acting badly, mm-hmm. when in reality, what it turns out to be is how good and valuable police really are, how misunderstood some things are. It tells a story that has an absolute twist at the end. You'll be surprised. I won't give that away. You'll be surprised. Definitely worth watching. Kenny came to my office, a while ago when this was first coming out, and he said, "Hey, take a look at this." And I go, "Oh, Phoenix Film Festival. You guys are going to be at the Phoenix Film Festival." And, "Oh, look, you're giving an interview." And he goes, "Yeah, I'm not going." And I go, "Well, why not?" He goes, "I got a vacation planned that day." And he goes, "We're not going to win." Fast forward, they won. Wow. Phoenix Film Festival, best documentary. They won that. Fox News has become involved. They have a bunch of, personalities that have been in various involvement with it.
Yeah.
Promotions are kicking up even more now, even though the movie's out, just because it's so topical.
Yeah.
They're getting more funding, more releases, more. It's just gained some speed. All of that being said, Kenny came to me in its filming days and said, all about this persuasion thing. You know a lot about that. And I said, I know a fair amount. And he goes, why? Talk to me. And it was just him and I talking to my office. He goes, talk to me about how you think the media persuades the public. We talked for probably 3 hours.
Yeah, I was going to say that could go a while.
We were pulling up examples on our phones and saying, take a look at this. And one of the greatest examples, I mean, I won't give a specific one. You can see what I mean by saying this. Let's say something happens. And it's back to my drawing of the two stick figures and the X in the middle. A news event happens. Just bounce through. CNN, MSNBC, Fox News, the same story, almost the same video, but different headlines. They will treat it completely different.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, so we talked about why is that and what is their power to persuade? How do they do it? And so finally, 3 hours ends. He comes back in with film equipment and stuff and says, let's go through that again.
Right.
I'm like, okay. So really, we went at least 2 hours on film. It was crazy. We just talked about everything.
Sure.
It comes down to when you see the film, if you ever do, it's just like anything else, right? A bunch leaves laying on the cutting room floor in the old days, but now digital. But it's probably just a couple of minutes. Mm-hmm. It's probably just a couple of minutes. And it talks about how exactly it kind of goes back to what we talked about earlier in this interview, which is news stories can Well, they're sensationalized, first of all. They want to get you to look. They want to get you to click. They want to get you to pay attention. Once they have your attention, they're going to feed in a narrative. And they're going to get the people who already agree with them to agree with them even more and stir it up. And they can make a small thing look extremely big on that screen. So there's a, and his graphics in there about what I'm saying, that he overlays the graphics, puts the film video together. It's just definitely worth seeing. The movie has a great message. I was proud to be a part of it. And that's how that came about.
That's great.
So where's it? Is it just online? Is it in theaters? Is it, I know there's not many theaters open yet, but.
Right. And that's a problem. It's in very limited release pre-COVID. And then this all happened. So I think it's available online. I think.
Is it on Netflix or do you know?
I'm not sure. I'd have to check that out. It may be by now. But it's, I think, bleedingbluemovie.com.
Okay. Yeah, I did watch the trailer, so I'll see if it says where else. But yeah, it's very timely for sure.
It sure is. But yeah, Kenny's just an incredible, you know, storyteller when it comes down to it. If you look at that for and deconstruct how it was put together, like what, where he's going here, here, and here, telling the story. I'm telling you what, stories are so persuasive. It's so persuasive. Even news stories are little mini stories, and
and
sucked into it.
Yeah, I do this with my wife all the time. I was, because I'm the copywriter, she's not. And something you said earlier, I was going to comment on, like, copy and persuasion is like a second language, right? You learn it, but to stay proficient at it, you have to continue to use it, and you have to use it in context of where other people are fluent, like the marketplace, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Because it's one thing to learn Spanish, but if you don't speak Spanish in Mexico or Spain or wherever, it ain't the same thing.
It falls apart. I mean, it's the old use it or lose it, right? I mean, that's a great example. And just recently, I've known Jay Abraham for a long time. I don't know if you guys know him, but I did a full page editorial in USA Today for him, just freelance on my own, because I definitely want to, I have those skills. I keep them up because I do one-off projects like that for people who can appreciate it.
Right.
And you mentioned in the Agora days, it would take like 6 weeks to write something. So few people understand it takes 6 weeks to write something. They're like, you know, they give you the assignment, like somebody who doesn't know, or a relative or something. Well, what are you working on? You're going to say the same thing 2 weeks later. What are you working on? You're going to say the same thing. Are you done yet? You know, it's definitely a process, because you're constructing your story, you're building your case. And those, I did a 2-page spread in USA Today for Jay that had Damon John and Tony Robbins in it. And the word count in that alone was crazy.
Yeah.
But I enjoy doing that, and whatever the format, whether it's direct mail or newspaper or online ads, because it doesn't matter, you know. It does not matter what the media is. It doesn't matter, because what you're doing is you're using human psychology to persuade somebody else to do something. And it's that simple. And I love that topic. And that's why I have this crazy room.
Yeah. And once you see it, you can't unsee it. Like you see it everywhere. Like I was going to say with my wife, I point out like the actual words they use in their headlines, in their opening dialogues, like, you know, they use these very strong, visceral type words in their monologues. And it's different, like you said, if you're on CNN, MSNBC, you know, or Fox, you know, and it's just crazy to watch how blatant it is. Just, it's just right there, but nobody sees it. Like it's covert if you don't understand it.
Exactly right. And so much is covert. Mm-hmm. It flies right under our ability to question. The people who are toughest to convince or persuade are us, you guys, me, people like us who like can look at something and be a little bit objective and go, wait a minute, your radar's up. It's up all the time because you're looking for it. But if you're not looking for it, you're going to go, oh, that makes sense. Or especially if it's in line with what you believe. Yeah. That chapter early on, Jonathan, where you said changing beliefs.
Yeah.
It's hard to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's on the flip side of that, it can be shockingly easy to do if you know how to ask questions the right way, not in an accusatory or prosecutorial way. It's just you're kind of moving people on to the next thing. And then pretty soon they're so far down the road, they're realizing that, well, maybe there is something to that. Giving new people information to cling on to, and then they're saving face at the same time. They're like, I didn't realize that. Well, now that I know that, you know, and you've got them moving down the road. So many different little things.
Have you ever seen that movie? I caught part of it this past week, Tin Men. I mean, it's a movie from the 80s.
Oh yeah, where they sell aluminum siding.
Yeah. So there's two companies out there and they're selling aluminum siding. Mm-hmm. And, but there's one scene in the movie that makes me think about this, because it's like, you talked about painting pictures and how people, you know, people that, they know a sales pitch when it's coming to them, but that, you know, these guys, this one company, and it's got Danny DeVito and Richard Dreyfuss. So Richard Dreyfuss, they're making their sales pitch, and Sean, you've seen it. You remember this. They go to the one, prospect's home. And they set up this camera in front of her home. So they're taking a picture, and she goes, excuse me, what are you doing? And they say, we're taking a picture of your home because we're part of, we're with like Time Magazine or someplace, some magazine like that. And they said, we're aluminum siding's the big thing. And what we want to do is take a picture of your house, because your house is going to be the before house. And then we're going to take a picture over here of the after house of a house that just got the aluminum siding. And she's like, so my house is going to be the before? So he's like, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's fine. It's fine. We, you know, we're just comparing the two. And she's like, well, I don't want to be the before, you know? So it's like amazing how, they painted a picture of that, although it was kind of sleazy the way they did it.
Yeah.
But how they did it without selling.
Sure.
Yeah. They put that image in her mind. They planted that image. Of her being the second, the beforehand, and she didn't want to be that. And obviously after that, she went straight to her husband and said, we're buying aluminum siding. So,
right. Yeah. That's a great example. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause it does. You showed her the future of what could be.
Right.
Yep.
Without even saying it.
That's right.
I mean, that's super covert there. So
no high pressure there. There's no, no price discussed. It's like, none of that mattered. And when you really want something, none of that stuff does matter.
That's right.
Yeah. Dan said that on the show last week. He's like, he was doing a package and one of the guys at Agora for the health, or Dan just felt like he shouldn't put so much proof in it. It was just felt like his more emotional plea. Mm-hmm. The guy was like, yeah, proof doesn't actually matter. And I think for the sale, that's true. I think for what you said earlier, for buyer's remorse, I think logic is important.
Right.
And to be able to tell their friends and things like that.
But that's timing, right? Because they've already made the decision. That was the emotional decision first, justified with logic. All those attitudes became that way because there's an element of truth in those, because we do buy emotionally.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Jim, we could probably talk for days. What else are you up to? What do you want to leave with the audience? Any projects you're on or places they can find more about you?
You know, I only have like that very long running project of the, I'm really digging into the questions and ways to tell stories that bypass everyone's ability to find out what's going on. So there's those projects in the background. Those might take a while to become anything. So I don't know about that. Ways they can find out more about me. I do have a website. It's very old. It's not updated because now I'm in the corporate world and I'm very much behind the scenes. Like when I mentioned I work with Jay Abraham, I do, but I say I don't tell people that, but now I'm telling you. But anyway.
It's kind of like just email it. Hey, can you, because you probably got a relationship that goes back.
Yeah, quite a ways. And if people want to reach out, they can definitely reach out. I have a very, very, I want to say little in the sense that it doesn't have a website. It's called National Copy Direct. And they can email me at jim@nationalcopydirect.com. And they would be able to send me a note, a question, anything, and they can go from there.
So do you, I know you're the VP of marketing with Patriot Software. Yep. And it, like I said at the beginning, I've heard their ads on XM radio a number of times, and they're very memorable because that little tune and everything. In fact, there's a number of times I've found myself like humming it, because it's like so catchy. But do you write Are you involved in writing any of those ads or?
Those ads, no, because those ads were written and aired before I came to Patriot.
Oh, okay. All right.
So, but the thing is, I mean, in all the metrics that all of us would study about how effective a various campaign is, they did something interesting because they did so much on SiriusXM and then they did an almost equal amount on terrestrial radio. Yeah. And they wanted to find out which one performs better. Mm-hmm. Which one do you think performed better?
Well, since you're asking, I'm going to say it's terrestrial. Good old fashioned AM FM.
Jonathan, yeah, I would say XM because I haven't heard them lately. So maybe they decided to go.
Well, it's interesting because they were absolutely even. Huh. The results were so even that the spend was even. The results were even. It made no difference whether, and they're a national company, Patriot is, so it doesn't matter whether.
Sure.
So they were completely even. The reason why you haven't heard them in a while, and that's actually true, is because just before COVID hit, the CEO of the company said, let's turn that down to zero right now. Mm-hmm. And it was before that hit. What he wanted to find out was how long is the tail of people remembering? Because at the beginning of this call, I told you I had a background in radio. And so I said, I'll bet you it's like a train, right? You take the train engine away and the train coasts for a while. To this day, we haven't been on the radio in at least 6 months.
Yeah. Yeah.
There was somebody on the Patriot site today that said, hey, just heard you on the radio. No, you didn't. but that's how people think.
Oh, yeah.
Remember the jingle?
Yeah. I could hum it. Yeah. I mean, it's easy.
Yeah. So that they are an incredibly technologically advanced company. Mm-hmm. They own all their own code. There's 150 employees, about 75% of them are all developers. Mm-hmm. And technology is just crazy. I mean, it's so far down the road that even though Patriot's small compared to the big guys who do payroll and accounting software like Intuit and QuickBooks, that they're going to catch up quick. They're young. Yeah. They're doing things that nobody else is doing. Mm-hmm. Nobody. I mean, the advancements are daily. It's like Silicon Valley right here in Ohio. It's crazy. Yeah. So this, watch out for this company. It's going to be a rocket. Cool. Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Jim, it's been fun, man. We appreciate you coming on. Sean, this is another one. We'll have to split down the middle, you know, but it's worth it. So it's been fun having you on, Jim. Appreciate you having a discussion with us on your book. And we'll be posting a link. I mean, even though it's like 15 years, it's still worth it. It's like a go-to. It's like a classic. Yeah. You know, I would say it's like in top five books on persuasion outside of Cialdini. You're not too far behind Cialdini there with Covert Persuasion. And I would encourage anyone that's a big fan of influence or persuasion to go out and get a copy of Covert Persuasion for sure. So I appreciate you having on. We'll put a link on it. And thanks again.
Yeah, thanks very much. This was great. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. All right.